Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, where we channel content and connections. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all of your custom content needs. Guys, today I'm really, really excited to bring you a conversation I had with Thomasina Skipper. Thomasina is someone that I met and was really kind of taken with. She has a remarkable history within the insurance industry, running her own business, being one of the first females to start an insurance business in Tennessee. And she has worked with countless people across several industries, getting them focused and honed in on what's important. She is a master of the one-page business plan, and she is a remarkable consultant. So I liked her so much that she actually spoke at one of our events this past year and did a remarkable job. So after she did that, I was so smitten with her that I thought, wait a minute, she needs to help me. So I now currently use her, and she has gotten me and my team very, very focused on the things that we can impact now. She is a lovely lady who is got a warm heart and a sparkling mind. And I am just really thrilled to share some of my conversation with
Thomasina Skipper. How are you doing today?
Enjoy. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What is new?
Oh, everything's new today. Hopefully, we will have a great conversation, and we can move forward from this point. How are you doing today? What's new for you?
It's cold. That's what's new. Oh. Is it cold over there?
It's cold here, too. You know, for Atlanta, they're not used to 25, 30-degree temperatures.
It is, you know, in Charlotte, it snowed on Sunday. So Saturday, well, you know, overnight on Saturday. And it was, I mean, it wasn't just a dusting. It was full on thick snow. And the funniest thing was it was gone by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was a lot of snow. I mean, we went to church and there wasn't that many people there. And you know, the minister was kind of going on about, you know, look, the perfect storm. I mean, it's freezing, it's snow, it's and then it was gone by the afternoon. So it didn't snow over there, did it?
Oh no, we haven't seen any snow at all this winter. And which is great because, you know, Atlanta can't handle 2 inches of snow, let alone more than that.
You know, I remember when I lived there, remember a few years ago when the it was like apocalyptic when the ice storm came and everybody to tell you this quick story. I had a young woman working for me, and she and a couple other people in the office said, listen, it's going to snow. We got to go home. And it was a Friday. And, you know, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I thought, well, that's ridiculous. I mean, come on. And, you know, you got to get a little tougher than that. And so they kept complaining. They're looking at the snow. One guy's got the app out saying, look, the snow is going to hit here. So finally, I let them go at about 2 o'clock, and I didn't think much of it. And then later, the news came on that, you know, the roads were crazy icy, and everybody got let off work at the same time. And I thought about it, and I went to sleep. And the next morning, I woke up, and I thought to myself, you know, I wonder if she ever made it back. I was specifically thinking about this one young woman. So I texted her. I said, hey, did you make it home okay? She said, oh, I'm not home yet. She had to sleep in her car, and her boyfriend ultimately had to come out and get her, and I felt terrible. So, yeah, I know how the weather can shut down Atlanta and all these southern cities, so hopefully we'll get through it. But anyways, well, stay warm, and I know you'll stay positive.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Always. Well, I appreciate you calling in, and you know, for my listeners, you know, I will let them know that not only is Thomasina a friend and someone who has spoken at our event, someone who is thoughtful, but I believe that you, you know, are changing the way that I look at my specific business. And I've just been really, really thrilled with our engagement, that I thought it would be really cool for you to share a little perspective on the world to our readership. And, you know, I know you've worked with countless people and you've seen the world of business from a variety of angles. And so with that said, I just thought, you know, what do you see? I mean, as you've gone through it over the years, what are some of the serious trends that you see happening, and what are some of the things that that have changed the most dramatically in your mind?
I think the thing that's changed the most dramatically is that client or the customer is no longer an entity that we are doing business with, that they have joined the dance. A lot of that has to be responsible to the internet. That, you know, before, people did not have the information at their fingertips. Mm-hmm. And so if you were an expert, you know, you were a salesperson or you're a technical expert, you literally had to provide them with the information in order for them to make a good decision.
Right.
Now, most of your clients and most of your customers are going to come to you already with some information, that right. they've done some research. So if you still play the game like you did 10, 20 years ago, you're not going to be well received by these clients, because you're going to assume that they're uninformed, and most of the time they're going to be much better informed than they used to be.
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, that's perfectly well put, because I believe that too, and the world has changed. The challenge, like for our industry, well, any industry for that matter, is that that what you just said is, if you're still going to be operating with that 10 to 20 year operating system, whether it's your Salesforce or what have you, it's just not going to get it done. And so what keeps people from changing, do you think?
Well, inertia. You know, if it's worked, how many times have you heard, don't fix something that's already working? But there's a level of evolution, I think, that we need to consider. And because our clients now will do their research now, and that's the difference I think we need to consider. They may not buy through the internet, but they will do their research through the internet. And so you still have all of the things that are important for a salesperson or a business owner to connect and complete the sale. Mm-hmm. But they have to maybe step back and take some time to talk to the customer and find out what is it that they really want to get. So you're no longer sold to. This is a companion process where you and I are walking down this together, and I am helping you to self-discover. Maybe you did some research, but you don't quite know all the fine nuances. Maybe you don't understand everything below the waterline. Maybe you haven't done the technical comparison between one product to another. So now I am your assistant. We're not adversarial. Mm-hmm. We now walk and talk together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I you know, that's good. I mean, I think that's what's exactly what it's ironic, right? I mean, to think that we need a differentiated relationship, and yet it's harder. You know, I keep talking about this, but it's harder to get to that point. And so what you're saying is they're doing the research on the web, and you've got to somehow let them find you. You know, it used to be knocking on doors, cold calling, doing all this stuff. But at this point, you're saying the power exists with them, and that they need to be able to find you. Is that correct?
No, not quite. I would say there are still those great practices that we've always done. I do believe we should still knock on doors.
Okay.
But at the same time, don't assume just because I knocked on your door that you don't know anything, that you need me to be your tour guide along this way. I have to be more cognizant of where you are coming from and what you actually ultimately want to get to, which brings us back to another part, and that's our employees. If you're a business owner and you have employees or you have staff, how do you help them figure out how to approach the client so that the client sees that there's some real value? I mean, I think the ticket to the show used to be, you know, we care about our clients, and so we're going to do whatever they ask. That's no longer acceptable. Clients now demand not only that you do what I ask, but now that you start anticipating what I'll need. And so as a business owner, working with your staff, how you manage the people that work for you, how you lead them, how you develop them, has a lot to do with how successful you'll ultimately be with that client relationship. And, you know, we're all in business for one reason and one reason only, and that's to provide value to the people who purchase from us.
Right.
We stop doing that, we're out of business.
Well, that's an interesting thing, right? Because a lot of people might have been hanging on your words there, thinking that you were going to say we're all in business to make money. But that's a really neat thing for you to say, because money is really the byproduct of what you're saying is that we're trying to create value for people. We're trying to take care of others and help them reach their dreams, accomplish their goals, and while that may sound really nice and some people say, oh, that's great, it's the truth, right? If we can focus on that, the money will come. So that's really interesting, Thomasina. Talking about the clients and trying to teach your employees the skills, because I think it's fascinating. In fact, it's dawning on me now talking to you that, you know, I'm a person who's been pushing this concept that there is a new day, that you've got to do a lot of this stuff that helps them find you. And certainly we do content, and I'm thinking, you know, the old day of knocking on doors can turn people off. But, you know, it dawns on me as you're talking that, no, there's still some real merit in that. And you're not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater. You're saying you collectively need to do both of them. Is that right?
Exactly. I mean, if you're going business and you don't do all the things that we need to do to let people know we're in business, you know, marketing is that, it's that story that we tell to the masses that says we really want to do business with you. And you know, money... I am all for money. I'm a devout capitalist, but money is the end result of providing value. You know, right. So if I just go after you and I want your money and I don't give any value, you're not gonna work with me. You're not gonna participate in our relationship long.
Right.
But so, you know, as we work to make this work between myself and my client or whoever you may be selling to, how we go about it is we still want to market. We still need to let the masses know our message, who we are, what we want to do, and how well we do it. We can do that through all types of media. Social media is very important today. And, of course, you know, magazines, publishing, any kind of other medias that we would use. Using these podcasts, and there's another media that we'll give out. So marketing is still very viable. I mean, we have to knock on that door literally and say, here we are, take a look at this.
Right. Let me ask you this, you know, so without focusing, because that, you know, I've been preaching that and talking about, look, you got to do this new type of marketing. I believe it's in the publishing world. But let's speak specifically to what you were saying, because on one side of the coin, we're saying, look, you can't do what you were doing 10, 20 years ago. It's probably not going to work. However, that connection, that, as you said, walking alongside of them, it, you know, getting to that level of relationship demands sellers who are differentiated. And as you work with multiple people and multiple organizations across the country, I wonder what skills have emerged, or, you know, what's the best practice in terms of sellers across the country? And you know, when you look at people who are the best at it, what is it that they do that maybe, you know, wasn't being done 10, 20 years ago?
It's interesting. I don't know if it wasn't done, but it wasn't maybe given the attention. The best sellers that I work with connect with people on more than one level. They get involved in the community. They give back. They're consistently, I mean, almost religiously, working for and generating referrals. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a reciprocal relationship that's going on. I'm not just going to ask you for a referral. I'm going to give you a referral. I'm going to bring some value, mm-hmm. Which brings me back to that whole social media thing. I mean, people don't want to be sold on social media. What they want is an opportunity to get to know whoever you are and to see if what you value aligns with what they value. And if that's the case, then they will join the dance at that point and say, well, maybe we can work together. That is so different from the way that we were brought in to think about marketing, right?
Right.
It's almost like instead of it being very aggressive, it's a very passive, you know, I take one step, I wait for you to take a step, that kind of thing. It may be difficult to build a business quickly like that because it goes against the grain. I mean, I want to talk to somebody today. I need 10 appointments. I need to do that kind of thing. So I don't believe it can be your only source of marketing. And I haven't really ran across people who have said that has worked 100%. Maybe
right.
In certain areas. But by the same token, I do think great marketers are always, they have their hat on all the time. They're always talking about what they do, wherever they go. They're extending themselves. They're always thinking about who else they could serve. And, you know, when we talked before, I mentioned to you that I think great salespeople also, when they talk, think vertically, not only the person I'm talking to today, but who serves you? Who do you do business with? Who are your clients? Who are your peers? Who are your competitors? If you're always thinking like that, you always have some potential people to talk to.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's interesting. I mean, I do believe that the salesperson of today, like you said, gets involved on more than one level. They are community builders. They get involved in the community. I really like that idea of it's not just asking for referrals. You're not just trying to build a brand to that would allow people to become ambassadors for what you do, you're also an ambassador for them. Meaning, you said, look, it's not just asking referrals, it's also giving referrals. And that is really, really interesting. I know it sounds pretty simple, but at the same time, that's the type of people that are going to be selling in the modern day. So that's really compelling stuff. So, that's awesome. That's awesome. See, this call is more for me than for anybody. This is awesome. So let me digress a little bit. I want to come back. I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what you're seeing with employers and planning and some of the things that seem, I know that I have used that gosh, just open up my world. But before I do that, can we talk a little bit about you and your chronology that how you got to where you are today and what you've been doing? Can you tell us a little brief history on Thomasina?
Sure. I started my career with Fireman's Fund Insurance Company as an in-house underwriter. And although it was a great opportunity to learn how to take a lot of facts and make decisions, I hated sitting at that desk. You know, I thought there was more. And so I eventually left and started an insurance agency, one of the first female insurance agencies in Middle Tennessee. I did that for a while, went with State Farm, and eventually went into management. I spent a number of years in management with State Farm from 92 into 2013, both in the Atlanta area and Omaha, Nebraska. And I received my MBA from Kennesaw State University in 2001. I really enjoyed being a part of small business growth and development. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's really where the rubber meets the road. I mean, when you have people who are in big business and run large organizations, they're insulated from mistakes. I mean, you can make a big mistake in a big corporation and absorb it. When you make mistakes in small business, you fuel every single piece of that, yeah. You know? And so you're forced to, you know, be all things to all people. You know, you're the HR manager, you're the sales manager, you're the operations manager, you're all of these hats. And you may not do them well, not, you know, especially not all of them, but you have to get a certain level of proficiency to be successful.
Right.
So I've enjoyed working with and helping people build and scale up their small business to for a level of success. Some of my personal desires is to show people how to lead other people. I mean, I've always, my MBA had a specialist in leadership, and I've always been pretty attached to learning more about how do you lead people? How do you get them to bring that extra discretionary effort above and beyond what they're paid for?
Right.
And I think it's not as easy. You know, I've met way too many people and talked to way too many bosses and managers who thought just because I paid you a salary, you should perform at a high level. And unfortunately, they don't.
Right.
So I've come to the opinion that not only should they work at a higher level, but, you know, people deserve a great boss. Yeah, and if you want them to be high performers, you have to, as a boss, really be involved in your own development so that you can be the best boss they can have.
Right.
And that at that point, we'll see that discretionary effort. We see the culture is built where people will bring more to the table, where they feel comfortable that they can make a mistake and they will be forgiven and almost you know, kind of brushed off and put back out there, do it again and do it better. That's what I have seen that has evolved a little more from the command and control managers of the 60s and the 70s. Today, we really have intelligent workers. They're brought up to think. They're exposed to all kinds of things. You can't get the best out of them unless you can connect and give them the best of you.
Right. Well, and you know, I really appreciate that because obviously, you know, I've been working with you and I just feel like I'm just starting to scratch the surface of that. And it is a lost art, clearly, in small business. And there's great opportunity to when you're looking at small business to bring some help, some organization, some structure, some planning, because they're really devoid of that. Sure, they could turn to small business associations, that type of thing, but I think you know, they're really not able to. They're so immersed in the day-to-day running of the business and getting things done, and that sometimes we don't step back and say, look, we've got to focus on building a stronger platform, structure, culture that will enable us to be even better. You know, in the big organizations, you know, they have typically departments and human resources and all this stuff dedicated to this. But I'm sure that there's challenges there. I'm sure that it gets a little antiseptic. And when you get a lot of people in one place, it may not feed through. But if I see this as almost an epidemic, because entrepreneurs, especially, we jump in and we think, here's this great idea, and we get it off the ground. And you know, my challenge specifically has been, you know, moving it from entrepreneurial to enterprise. And that's not necessarily a numbers thing as much as it is a sophistication standpoint. That you know there's a lot of fun being an entrepreneur. It's a lot of fun doing this, you know, having a lot of different plates spinning. But the reality is, at some point, you do have to bring some structure and some planning to it. And so I'm sure you're seeing that across the board.
I think you hit the nail on the head. The problem I find in the larger organizations, the enterprises, is the groupthink. And the thing that I got a chance to sit through a wonderful lecture on corporate ethics. And one of the things the professor spoke of is when you have a culture where you actually don't encourage challenges, where you encourage the opposite, that everybody think the same, act the same, walk the same, that, you know, you get a Wells Fargo kind of thing, where even if something seems to be wrong and unethical, it's not encouraged for you to speak up, because then you are an outlier. You are not part of the group. And there's so much dangerous, that's a minefield, when large organizations stop encouraging challenges, stop encouraging people to speak their mind and to give a different opinion. Right. So that, I find, is a huge problem. And if you are smaller and you want to scale up to become a large enterprise, you can't do that by yourself. Right. You know, you are limited in the number of hours or the energy. So it is a matter of providing an organization culture where people feel they can grow and develop. I mean, as a small business owner, you don't want to be the one who has to always turn on the lights, open the door, do all of those things, because you can't go on vacation. You can't have any other life.
Yep.
And then you don't enjoy it.
Right.
But when you begin to hire people and you build them and develop their skills, my MBA professor, I'll never forget, said, hire good people, invest in their development, and get out of the way. You know, good people may actually do it better than you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't be all caught up in I know everything. You have to be willing to trust and invest, and then your business can move to the higher level. But that also happens at the enterprise level, too. I mean, if, in fact, you only hire people, you know, I heard a coach speak, and he said that there are two types of folks he never wants to be on his football team. He said, those who will only do what I say and those who won't do what I say.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you want is someone who is bright enough, smart enough to understand the bigger picture, whatever vision you have. And that is your job as the leader. I don't care what organization you're in. Your job is to continually show and speak to the vision of where you want to take your department, your organization. So that when you're not around, your worker says, I know this is where they want to go. And this is a new situation. Let me think it through.
Right.
That's the kind of person you want working for you. Not one that says, well, they never told me how to do this, so I'm going to sit here and do nothing. No, that's not who you really want working for you.
Right. Well, and you know, and that's funny, because I think that it's so true. And one of the challenges for people like me and the printing industry and the small business of printing business, and even more so any of us who are trying to transform and incubate new businesses, you know, our industry specifically is you know, it's an old industry that's been putting ink on paper for a long time, but is crazy full of technology and crazy full of new ideas and energy. And so they've got an create new businesses around kind of this marketing services platform. So anytime you're being an entrepreneur or creating new ideas or trying to make change, you know, you need obviously really good people, and it's exciting. I find the challenge is that I'm not organized around it. And so that's what you and I have talked a lot about. And I think that's a lot of what you've gotten into, because what strikes me about working with you is that, you know, we've gotten very, very focused, and I would say almost simple, kind of simple on the other side of complex, so that we're focused and we can do what we can do, and we can and focus on getting a few things done. And rather than, I mean, I told you before, I mean, I get a list as long as your arm, and you know, it becomes stressful to try to be able to get that done. And when you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to incubate these new ideas and opportunities, your mind goes. But what you're doing with people, and what obviously you're doing it because you see the opportunity, is to get people focused. And it's, again, I think that's where there's some real, entrepreneurs can't see that, but when it's almost like you smack me up the head and I look, side of the head, and I look at it and I go, yeah, wait a minute, I need to just focus here. So talk a little bit about how you got into this, working with people and the one-page business plan, and why that was so compelling to you, and how it's worked across industries.
I met the owner of the one-page business plan, Jim Horan, through an association that I have always been involved with, Gamma. And we hit it off right away. Jim has been an ex-CFO, and he saw a need to help people to build their organizations and to focus. So he created the one-page business plan, which is an opportunity to sit down and just focus on what are the important things, your vision and your mission, your objectives, what needs to be measured, then your strategies. How will you go about getting yourself to that point where you can meet your objectives, and then your action plans? And, you know, he used some very key elementary psychology in that the human beings actually work well in threes. That when we have a list longer than three, it may not actually work out. So every quarter, when we look at this, we only put three action items that we should do in order to help us to meet our objectives and to keep our strategies in line. So the one-page business plan, after I retired from State Farm, I knew I still wanted to be very, very engaged. And so I contracted and trained under Jim Horan and Tony Neal to become one of their certified consultants using the one-page business plan.
Mm-hmm.
It is an awesome tool. It's web-based. You know, I worked with people for years that had 10, 12-page business plans. It was a mammoth document that we do at the end of the year or January, and I guarantee you by April, nobody looked at it.
Yeah.
It was too much there, and it wasn't actually a roadmap. And what a business plan should do for you, one, it should help you think differently. Because if you don't start thinking differently, you certainly can't act differently.
Mm-hmm.
So the business plan, the process, helps you to think differently. My job as a consultant is to ask those tough questions. I mean, as an entrepreneur, who gets to ask you those questions? I mean, you know, it's almost like you're out there on that island by yourself, right?
Right.
So I ask those tough questions for you to go a little deeper inside. Because what's really important is not that you run anybody else's business, but that you realize who and what you are and run your business.
Right.
That, to me, is the secret, you know. So we figure those things out. We put them on the plan. And then weekly, monthly, we review these plans. Because, you know, what good is a plan? What good is that navigational chart to take you from one place to another if you never look at it.
Right. Exactly.
So this is, and if it's out of date or it's wrong, that's okay. I mean, I think Eisenhower said the plan is important, but planning is very, very important because it is a process. It's an action verb, so to speak. where you are constantly reevaluating, where am I trying to go? Have I figured out the right way to get there? What do I need to do? So it's kind of like that self-guided missile where you're always trying to correct yourself so that you eventually land where you want to go.
Yeah, I love it. I have my little plan right here, right in front of me, and I carry it with me. I mean, that's another thing, right? That this concept is that I can have this with me at all times. The idea that business plans need to be 10, 20, you know, 100 pages long. I understand if you're making a big pitch to a venture capitalist and there's got to be financials and the whole deal and there's an overall right. business plan. But individually, we need to break this down and simplify it. Now, I have been with a very large organization and used to spend an inordinate amount of time in meetings and an inordinate amount of time talking and planning. And, you know, you felt like you had to draft a document that was, an autobiography. I mean, it was, or a novel. I mean, it was ridiculous. And so it becomes this world where we're almost creating busy work and going through all this stuff and mistaking progress, you know, being busy for progress. So I think it's applicable not just to people like me and the printing industry and small business. And, you know, I think it applies everywhere. And, you know, back in the day when I was running a marketing department, and I could have used something to get me focused like this with my staff. And again, we're not trying to make a plug so much here as to say, really, we talk a lot about sales. We talk a lot about strategy. One of the things that I have needed a lot of help in was simply getting focused and being able to get stuff done, because plans don't mean ideas, plans, strategies. They don't mean anything unless you execute on them. I'm sure there's tens of thousands of great ideas out there that have never been executed on, so they've meant nothing. So it's really fascinating, the simplicity of getting this down to, hey, this is what I can focus on. And then I can take mine and I can start helping to create it for my team. You know, each team say, well, what are you going to be focused on? And so you've seen a lot of success with this.
Oh, without a doubt. I think you're really clear when you talk about execution. You know, if you have a great plan and poor execution, then that didn't work out for you. Even a weak plan that's executed well is better than nothing.
Right.
And so what happens is these huge mammoth plans really fall very short of execution because it's just too much. It's too complex. So when you can simplify it, when you can make it clear, and like you said, easy, portable, I can refer back to it, what's important, that's one major step. But another thing I've saw, too, that came out of this one-page business plan is distractions. You know, every day we wake up and we throw ourselves on the sword of whatever our work or may be, and there's constant distractions that are going to come in. Other people's agenda, other people who think that you should be doing something different. If you don't have a really good, solid, focused plan, you may end up being distracted, going, you know, doing something that's important to somebody else that may not necessarily come back and meet your objectives.
Yeah.
So, you know, in lieu of a lack of a good plan, everything sounds good. You know, it's the shiny ball syndrome. So, and that I find is one of the most important things, because as business people, we tend to be, we like folks, we like ideas, we like concepts. I mean, if we didn't, we'd just be regular, you know, line workers. But we're intrigued, so to speak, mm-hmm. by other concepts. So when they come into our world, if we're not careful, we will go down the rabbit hole in the whole wrong direction.
Right.
So I like having something that I can refer back to, as you said, on a consistent basis. These are my words. These are my dreams, my hopes, my aspirations. And it's what I am working to execute to get me where I need to go.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter. I mean, I've worked this plan with nonprofits. I've worked it with profits. I've worked it with, people who sell insurance, people who are running a huge hair design. It does not matter. The concepts are the same no matter what the industries are.
Right. Yeah, I think that it has been we all need help. I think that's the big thing. You said it earlier. We all need help. And I'm a typical guy, I got to do it myself. And our industry has a lot of small, medium-sized businesses that are run, by the owners and general managers. And they're very, very, hey, we can do this. And I think one of the things beyond the organization, obviously we've talked a lot about, sales is still very applicable. You have to create some of this stuff over here to help them find you. But at the same time, the world demands these kind of sellers that can get close. We've talked a little bit about being organized. And that gets us focused. But I think one of the last pieces that I like about this is that it gives you, like you said something earlier about, it gives you somebody to answer to. I know that you and I are going to talk every month, and I get nervous. I feel like I'm back in the, holy smokes, I got somebody to answer to. And it usually is my wife, but I'm thinking to myself, this is good. I have tasks. I have things that have got to get done. And leaders oftentimes don't have that. And certainly when you go to the big organizations, there's a board to answer to. But a lot of our industry, there's nobody who necessarily has to answer up. And it's one thing to say, I need to answer up to regarding the financials and report on the financials. It's another thing to be held to our own task list, our own strategy, our own action items. So I think that's something that's desperately needed in terms of not just the planning, but this accountability piece. And I feel like, let me ask you about that. The culture in our country right now, and it is one sometimes where there's not a lot of accountability. And I feel like, gosh, if you're going to be a devout capitalist, then accountability is a big deal. And what you were talking about, being in a culture that's able to make mistakes, to stick your neck out a little bit, but also being accountable. I feel like we have this world of blame, and when you have a list like this, it can make you more accountable. Do you see that as an issue?
Without a doubt. What happens when we become self-employed? I hear it all the time. Why did you decide to become, start your business? And the first thing I'll hear is, well, I didn't want to have a boss anymore. I think I can do this. Mm-hmm. Well, there's two things we give up when we give up a boss. We give up someone whose role is to set priorities for us so that we know what's important and what we should be working on first. And then we also give up someone who holds us accountable. Now, don't get me wrong. I have had some terrible bosses in my work experience. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, these are some major roles that anyone that's in that position will hold. So as a self-employed person, the thing you have to do is put in place a mechanism that helps you identify what's important and what's your priorities. That, to me, is the one-page business plan. It keeps us focused on our priorities.
Right.
Should I be talking to or going on this trip? Should I entertain this idea? That's what the one-page business plan will do. And then the accountability piece is where I come in, is where I ask those tough questions. All right, you did do this. Is it okay? I mean, sometimes distractions are not as bad as we think. Sometimes they are an opportunity for us to learn. Mm-hmm. I had a client who decided he was going to buy a building. And because, you know, he thought he could do a better job of being the general contractor. Well, that really wasn't his business. His business was running a financial service agency. So you can imagine if we walk down this road about a couple of months, he hasn't had time for his business because he was in the business of general contracting. And he didn't know what he was doing. That became a disaster. I mean, so every time we talked, I would ask those same questions. And eventually he did get to the point where, you know what, I think I'll just hire a general contractor to take over this business.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something that we learned in that process, though. What we did learn is that his business, that he was actually kind of micromanaging. What we learned is that that business really did very well without his micromanaging, something I had been encouraging him to kind of release. So when he stepped back, the lesson learned from his distraction was maybe he didn't have to micromanage. He had good people. He could scale this up to the next level because he didn't have to touch everything. He didn't have to see everything. He had great people. So that small distraction, which looked like he was huge, actually there was a lesson buried inside of it, so that after he got his contractor in, he could view his business differently and now scale it up and hire four or five more people because he didn't feel like he had to now do every single thing with everybody he ever hired.
Right. Exactly.
Strange kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, You're dead nuts on. I'm a huge fan, and we're just getting into it. And I wasn't necessarily meaning this to be, you know, a commercial for what you do. Although if that's the case, I'm more than happy that it is. But I do love your perspective. When we first met, you know, obviously you were gracious enough to speak at our event, and I think that was a big hit. But it's not just your perspective, Thomasina, it's that you've got, there's times when you and I are talking and you just simplify it. And that alleviates some things for me. It still does, it's still a lot, you know, there's still a lot of pressure to get stuff done. But it's almost like, you know, my head is swimming with everything that we've got going, and then you kind of bring it back and say, look, this is what you can get done right now. So, you know, I want you to know I really appreciate that. I really appreciate your perspective, and I think it's important that I can't wait for people to hear this. Let me ask you this, though. Most importantly, how's the family? How are the grandkids doing?
Oh, everybody is doing great. You know, no complaints, knock on wood. We're blessed every day.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was so funny. I still think about it every once in a while when I think it was this past Christmas where you, I can't remember, you were talking about spending some time with them and, you know, just kind of by your lonesome with them and you know, resonated with me. So it's nice to know that they're, you know, there's good people in the world, but they also have great passion for the business side of things. So real quick, let me ask you, last thing I'm going to ask you is so if people want to get in touch with you, where would they go?
They can go to my website. It's www.thomasinaskipper.com.
Cool. Excellent. Well, listen, I've taken up a lot of your time. I think this is going to be a really neat message for our readership, because I know it's resonated with me, and I feel like what we've done with Canvas and our community has connected really well with them, and we've been preaching a lot of the right stuff over the years, but I think this is a neat and important message for them to hear. So I can't thank you enough, and obviously, I will be talking to you in a couple weeks,
okay.
We'll get my act together.
You have a great rest of the month, and I'm sure you're going to get your act together. I have no doubt about that.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You got it. I appreciate it, Thomasina.
Okay.
Talk to you
Goodbye.
Soon. Take care. Bye. Guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Thomasina Skipper and feel the same way that I do. She has an enthusiasm for people. She understands that there needs to be deep connection between us and our clients. I love what she had to say about bringing value as opposed to making money. I love the fact that she doesn't apologize for being a devout capitalist, but yet realizes that you need to be organized and you need to be able to connect. So this has been a really, really fun interview, and I am thrilled that you joined us all for this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. A reminder that this episode was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. I want to thank Thomasina for taking the time. She's already spends enough time with me, and for her to share a little bit of that with you means a great deal. Please make sure to share this with your friends and stay tuned for another episode of Brushstrokes. Until then, thanks for listening and take care.